Good morning. This is Les Harms on behalf of the Adams County Historical Society, welcoming you to another moment in time, a brief segment of Adams County history. COVID, a word that was hardly in anybody's vocabulary 5 years ago, a word that now strikes fear into millions of people worldwide, had a parallel earlier in the 20th century. No one seemed to be safe from the dreaded word then, and that fear struck fearsome viral disease had gripped the United States during the earlier to the mid-20th century, and that was poliomyelitis, polio for short. Adams County was not immune. Personal anecdotes tell us the story. Carol Cleffinger has done extensive research on this topic, and the interviews that I'll present to you this morning are due to her efforts, and I thank her for those efforts. So, let's get started. William Huff, Adams County farmer, felt like he had the flu on his wedding day in 1930. He was bedridden for some time, and after that, his right leg simply stopped functioning. 4-year-old Wayne Strasburg walked behind his father's plow on the farm near Ayr one spring day in 1943. The next morning, he woke up with a stiff neck. His parents rushed him to the country doctor in Blue Hill, who diagnosed him with polio. Wayne had to completely relearn how to walk, and his left leg never recovered. Shirley Galzo, age 13, woke up in the middle of the night in 1949 at her home in Hastings, aching all over her body. Following 2 years of painful treatment, she finally regained use of the affected arm and leg. September 1951, 6-year-old Marianne Krause got out of bed on a school morning near Holstein and fell flat on her face. Both of her legs were totally paralyzed. Several days later, her sister Claire, age 8, began having muscle contractions. A busy summer occupied Larry Becker in 1952. The 12-year-old Hastings boy was selling ice cream from a cart attached to his bicycle. During the day, he was delivering a paper route in the evenings. As he biked home one August morning, his legs gave out. He struggled to push his bicycle. And within days, he too was admitted to the hospital. He never did recover the use of his hands and his arms. All of these local people were beginning their personal battles with polio. They represent a number of other Adams County residents who suffered similar fates before a polio vaccine was released. Before AIDS, before the West Nile virus, the most fearsome viral disease that gripped the United States from the early to the mid-20th century was polio. It was known also infantile paralysis in its early years. Its most famous victim was President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, whose personality and celebrity status helped create the March of Dimes crusade against polio in 1938. By the early 1950s, the disease was considered an epidemic, and nearly every American knew of somebody that had polio. The number of cases swung wildly from year to year, often peaking in the late summer months. Gerald Stumble Lockwood was a child in Hastings during the earlier polio years. She described her mother during those dark summers as being the most careful person in the world. She wouldn't let us go swimming, made us take our own treats to the movies, almost wouldn't let us touch anyone. After Cheryl's brother and an elderly woman 3 doors down the street were diagnosed with polio, people in the neighborhood were convinced maybe the water was tainted. Claire Hupp recalls, the practice at our rural community was, when church was over, people would stand outside and talk for a while. My mom said that when we were diagnosed with polio, people would literally scatter away from us like they were dripping germs. Georgie Evans came to Hastings for nurses training at Mary Lanning Hospital at the height of the epidemic. When she began dating future husband Chuck Evans, he had suffered a mild case of polio as a child. Chuck's mother took her aside and said, "You can't take care of those polio patients. What if you were to get it?" Georgia doesn't recall any student nurses or hospital staff being affected with the virus, possibly because of the extra precautions they took to maintain a sterile technique on the polio ward. But she recently said, "I can remember the fear of scarlet fever and meningitis, but the fear of polio was different because you didn't know what caused it, and no one was immune." Infantile paralysis was identified in Adams County by 1916 when two children were diagnosed. Maureen Giddings, age 6, living near Pauline, and then 10-year-old Carl Schlachter, living southeast of Hastings. Those two were the two diagnosed cases. During the early 1990s, hospitals were not used unless a case was especially dire. Quarantining at home was the usual method, and the entire household usually remained quarantined 3 to 4 weeks. Rehabilitation was in its infancy. Carl Schlachter, who was diagnosed in 1916, seemed to recover completely in spite of being a grave case. His daughter tells that he worked as a mechanic and a farmer with the full use of his arms and legs, but he had a lifelong aversion to watermelon because he got polio shortly after he ate watermelon, and somehow he associated the two. Lorene Bloom encountered polio in 1923 at the age of 2. Her persistent German immigrant parents, in spite of the language difficulties, obtained treatment for her that was good for its time, even though most of it seemed spotty by today's standards. William Huff, who was ill on his wedding day in 1930, with polio's earliest symptoms, became bedridden at home, but was never hospitalized. He recovered, except for the right leg, which gave him a severe limp. His daughter-in-law, Claire Huff, remembers, "He managed to keep on farming, but it was hard for him to get on the tractor. When he got in the car, he always had to pick up the one leg and throw it in." Genevieve Ground Conway, another 1930 victim, was 2 years old when she contracted polio. She and her mother came from their farm near Juniata to be quarantined. Wayne Strasburg received medical treatment but was diagnosed in 1943. His doctor told his father, "Make a wooden trough to keep the leg straight while he lay in bed." This, however, left him with a foot drop and a permanent limp. To strengthen both legs, the doctor prescribed lots of bicycle riding. For reasons still unexplained, polio cases seemed to peak in the late summer and the early fall months. Whole families with polio were quarantined. Paul Powers remembers returning home after being hospitalized with polio in 1946. "They quarantined our whole family, put a big red sign by the front door. He, his sister, his father remained in the house for 3 to 4 weeks. Polio was so unpredictable because you never knew whom or where it was going to strike. Normally, the polio virus stopped in the intestinal tract, where it might cause temporary discomfort, like fever, headache, diarrhea, but no permanent damage. The trouble came on those rare occasions when the virus would enter the bloodstream, find the nervous system, and begin destroying the cells of the spinal cord. Any of the body's muscles could be affected. And so that ends part one of the polio story. In part two of the next broadcast, we'll be talking about a revolutionary development, the iron lung. The iron lung. Well, so ends part one of the polio saga, and part two will continue with a story in Adams County. So, this moment in time has been a presentation of the Adams County Historical Society. We invite you to listen, to learn, and to please consider joining our society that we might preserve the history of our county. You can also visit our website, www.adamshistory.org. And so again, this is Les Harms inviting you to tune in on the second and the fourth Fridays of each month. Thank you for listening.